Good morning. This is Focus 580, our morning telephone talk show. My name is Jack Brighton. Glad you could listen today. Nearly everyone looking at the condition of Illinois schools would agree they are in the midst of a funding crisis. At least 80% of public school districts in the state are facing deficit budgets, and more than a third face major red ink. The Illinois state constitution assigns the state primary responsibility for financing the system of public education, and that's a quote. But in reality, the state pays only about 36% of school expenses today, a percentage that has been declining over the recent years. During this hour, Focus 580 will be talking about the funding picture for Illinois' public schools with members of a new campaign called A Plus Illinois. A Plus Illinois is hoping to mobilize enough political support to change how Illinois education is financed, which was the name of their previous campaign along these lines, in part by reducing reliance on local property taxes. We'll talk about that and the other parts of the plan during this hour. We have with us three guests here in the studio. Gene Amberg is the superintendent of Urbana School number 116. Lynn Warfel is, among other things, he's on the Parkland College Board of Trustees. He's the vice chairman of the College Board of Trustees at Parkland. He's also on the Illinois Community College Trustees Association, the Illinois Community College Board, and the Champaign County Farm Bureau, and he chairs the school subcommittee of the Champaign County Farm Bureau. Also, Dennis Verkler, he is Director of News and Information for the Illinois Farm Bureau and also Director of Information for A Plus Illinois. We will talk with them during this hour, and we also welcome your questions and comments on the topic of school funding in Illinois. The phone number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line anywhere you hear us around the state of Illinois. Actually, anywhere in the continental U.S., if you're listening online, you can use that toll-free number, 800-222-9455. Well, gentlemen, good morning, and thanks for being here.
Good morning.
Morning.
Just to start with, could someone please tell us a little bit more about A Plus Illinois, how it got started, who was involved, and so forth, and maybe Dennis Verkler, you could start with that.
Sure, be glad to. A Plus Illinois is actually the third coalition in the last 16 years that's attempted to solve this problem. This particular one started last winter, mostly by several organizations in Chicago, and it's included a broad spectrum of groups, civic interest groups. I'm with the Illinois Farm Bureau, of course, their members. The Chicago Urban League, the Illinois Education Association, Voices for Illinois Children, the Metropolitan Planning Commission. Those are some of the larger member organizations that belong. And then we have more than 100 community-type organizations, of which one exists here in the Champaign-Urbana area. And those are very important to this coalition because it's important that we show that there's widespread grassroots interest in changing the way we fund education in Illinois.
Mm-hmm. And what exactly are you, what kind of activities is A Plus Illinois engaged in? Is it a lobbying effort? What exactly are you?
Well, like this activity, talking on the radio,
right.
Getting people who are concerned about education to know that there is a unified statewide effort in place. To try to get a message to the legislature that we need to change the way we fund education in Illinois. There are activities taking legislators to school. Had one of those in Champaign-Urbana. We've had them in several other cities where we try to show members of the legislature that what the situation is with local schools, funding issues especially. Mm-hmm. We do editorial board meetings. We've done just a lot of public outreach and attempts to get people to get onto the website for A Plus Illinois, which is A Plus Illinois, one word, APLUSIllinois.org. And they can find out all about the organization at that point if they're concerned about education funding and volunteer to help us out.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Well, let's talk about the situation of education funding in Illinois and why you are attempting to address it. And for this, maybe I could turn first to Gene Amberg,
sure.
Superintendent of School for Urbana District 116. And ask the question we often ask on this program, how bad is it?
Well, Jack, first of all, thanks for the invitation to speak today. But, you know, the issues of adequate funding and school quality are really intricately connected. And where one lives in Illinois should not determine the quality of the public education that that child receives. And that's, unfortunately, what's occurring in Illinois. We have long believed that in Horace Mann, our father of public education, who said that, you know, education can be the great equalizer. Well, unfortunately for many of the 2 million school children in Illinois, that is not the norm because quality of education available to them is too closely linked to the wealth of one's community. So it can be bad, and I can give you specific examples. In Urbana, for example, the greatest flaw in funding for us is through real estate taxes is that we have a shrinking tax base. It's an issue of land that's owned by tax-exempt groups in Urbana. And as much as we love the University of Illinois, and it's a wonderful resource to us, it does have some drawbacks. And that, and coupled with a couple of major hospitals, a federal courthouse, and numerous other court buildings that have expanded over the last number of years, they've really taken a large chunk of the tax base from our school system. And so that's part of the problem. How bad it is, you've referred to. Can that all be attributed to poor management practices or outrageous labor demands that over 80% of nearly 900 school districts that are in the state of Illinois are experiencing some financial trouble, deficit spending kind of trouble? So in our own particular area, we're strange bedfellows here at the table, I think, in lots of ways, because tax caps really affect us as well. And over the past number of years since 1996, when they were passed in this county, the effect of has been a loss of nearly $2 to $3 million from our particular school district. So, lots of issues. It is not good, and with the state's structural deficit that continues to increase, now is the time to do something about this.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know that some people may feel that. You know, we've heard for years that the schools need more money, that, the funding for education has always been a problem. You know, maybe it seems like it's always been a problem. And I guess the question is, you know, in recent years, you mentioned the tax caps passed in Champaign County in 1996, and many other counties had those in place in the years preceding 1996. You know, has it, in fact, gotten that much worse in recent years?
Well, in our particular school district, I think that it has. We go in cycles in education. Lynn and I were talking earlier, and he's been a board member on a local school district for years, and we'd do well for a few years, and then we'd go into the dumper a little bit, and it's so cyclical. And we need to fix this. I think that this state needs to fix their tax structure in order to create an adequate, reliable, and sustainable revenue source. And so, yeah, it's really bad, and I don't think it's going to get any better because the economy in the country and in our state doesn't seem to be as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's turn now to Lynn Warfel. And you have a number of roles, including at Parkland College and the Illinois Community College Trustees Association, et cetera. And I know you've been involved in this for a long time.
That's true.
You know, what could you add in terms of, you know, your perspective on, you know, what the nature of the problem is and what effort needs to be made to address it?
Well, there is a long history of inadequate funding. My great-grandfather was on the original school board for the one-room school just down the road from the house I live in now. And my grandmother told the story of my grandfather and the other director standing in the dirt road in front of our house yelling at each other. They were both so upset over the funding for that one-room school. And so in some ways, we haven't changed. There's a tremendous appetite for dollars to educate children. And many people have the attitude that background is where we are now. That's not right. We have a crisis that is different than historical data. And the number of school districts that have deficit funded for the last 3 years is enormous. The number of school districts that are right at bankruptcy's door is about 20. The current situation is at a crisis level. The future looks grim, and something has to give. Historically, the basis for school funding was pretty much property taxes. When that system was developed, pretty much everything was visible property. So it was an excellent way to assess wealth and somewhat fairly or as best possible divide up the costs of education amongst the taxpayers. Today, property is not the vehicle it used to be. It's still an important part of the whole package, but relying on property for the major portion of education funding is a disaster, and the data shows what kind of disaster it is.
Okay. Let's talk about then the ideas that are on the table to address the funding imbalance. And as I understand it, the reliance on property taxes creates this imbalance between wealthy and poor districts and doesn't adequately fund education. The state is supposed to provide the preponderance of funding for schools. That I guess numerically that would mean at least 51%. But the idea is to lower property taxes and raise income taxes. Is that accurate?
That's the two major pieces that's being looked at here. There are some other portions to one of the vehicle bills that's being used to discuss this whole issue, mm-hmm. House Bill 750.
Right.
But those are the two major portions. The third segment of that really is a broadening of the sales tax base to include more things under sales taxes. And if you look at our current economy, most people who study this have come to the conclusion that the service segment of our economy is the big section now, and it's very dynamic. Mm-hmm. Property does not fit into that very well at all. So any kind of a long-term sustainable support of school systems needs to recognize the change in wealth in America today.
And the change in the economy, the way that the sales taxes are generated based on the nature of work and et cetera.
Jack, I might add that House Bill 750 is an initiative that is, as Lynn said, a vehicle for us to resume the discussion that gets, you know, tabled year after year with the legislation. We now, through Representative Meeks in Chicago, who's an independent, there is this bill that's sponsored by, I think, about 13. Rick Winkle here in Champaign-Urbana area is also one of the major sponsors of the bill. And I think it's important to note that it's a vehicle to help us resume this discussion. We have been talking about these kinds of issues for decades. And Illinois has the dubious distinction of having the widest achievement gap between poor and non-poor students in the country. And we've gotten an F. We're the only state in the union that has gotten an F for school financing by many publications. And it's time to do some comprehensive restructuring.
Okay. Let me just reintroduce our guests. We're talking this morning with members of the A-Plus campaign. It's a campaign to reform education funding in Illinois. Our guests are Gene Amberg, whose voice you just heard. He's the superintendent of Urbana School District 116. Lynn Warfel, who is involved in a lot of things, including the Parkland College Board of Trustees and the Champaign County Farm Bureau. And also Dennis Verkler, who's director of news information for the Illinois Farm Bureau. And they're all members of the A-Plus Illinois campaign. We do have one caller waiting, and we will talk with them. Let me also mention the phone numbers if others would like to join us. The number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll-free anywhere else you hear us, 800-222-9455. We have someone in Savoy on line number one. Good morning.
Hello, good morning. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I just want to say I really agree with what's being talked about in terms of a lot of inequity between districts, you know, rich and poor. One thing I've been curious about is, like, with our local schools, and I don't know if you have these kinds of numbers available, but say a local district, what is the amount that is being spent per pupil in a given district, say in our area? Do you happen to have anything like that?
Okay, Gene Amberg.
I can tell you exactly how much we spend in Urbana, and it's $7,204 per student. That's quite It's a little above the average in Illinois. Uh-huh. As you have heard us, the differences are huge in per capita spending across school districts in our state. We go as low as about $4,500 or so in that range down in some of our poorer counties in East St. Louis and those areas to as high as over $18,000 that's spent annually on a youngster.
$18,000
up in some of the collar counties, and they'll be spending a huge amount. And we're not talking about public schools versus private schools here, as you understand.
Right.
We're talking about public schools. So
Wow. For
some schools to have, like in East St. Louis, have lead paint peeling from ceilings that where kids go to school versus kids who have pools and gymnastic equipment and all those great things. So Champaign would spend just a little less than that, I think, per pupil in the high $6,000 range, and Mahomet and some of the others are in that area as well.
Right. Well, you know, and the thing I was noticing the other day is, you know, the amount, like in my own paycheck, you know, the amount that I pay in state income tax, I was kind of looking at, it was like a third of what I pay federally, it seemed like. And I was thinking, you know, I'd rather have my money, you know, staying here in Illinois more than going to the federal government. You know, when I hear reports of them building schools in Iraq, and I'm for education everywhere, but as you're talking about our schools and hearing reports, you know, even as close as like Danville schools, someone was telling me, are in severe, you know, crisis in some of their facilities. So,
well, the income tax that you refer to, Illinois still is one of the lowest income tax states in the nation. So even if we rose it a little bit, we would still be pretty far down there.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. I have a number of questions just to follow up. You know, we mentioned at the outset the Illinois State Constitution mandates the state support the preponderance or the majority or the, be the primary source of education funding, I think is the phrase. Haven't there been some court cases that sort of looked at the fact that the Illinois State Legislature is not essentially doing that?
Well, as a matter of fact, there have been two Supreme Court cases. I can't cite them and tell you all of the details. But, yes, we've had three blue ribbon panels that have been appointed by different governors in this state over the last couple of decades. We've had two Supreme Court cases, and we've had a number of initiatives that have looked at this.
Another issue that I'll raise is the No Child Left Behind Act, the federal law that essentially requires schools to meet certain achievement standards. And I know, Jean Amberg, you're dealing with that in the Urbana School District. It's something that certainly looking at the picture in Illinois, it looks like about maybe a third of Illinois schools are failing to meet the requirements of the act. And I guess is that related to funding directly, or are there other issues that as a superintendent you're looking at as well?
It's very closely related to funding. School achievement, of course, is also highly correlated to home and family factors. When you look at adequate housing, health care for children, work for their parents, these things are all very, very important. So the need for early childhood, for after-school programs, for special education, for social-emotional learning kinds of activities is imperative. They're very tied. The physical problems extend far beyond in Illinois. The districts in poverty-poor areas, they're hit us all of the school systems. And No Child Left Behind is no one of us wants to leave any child behind. But these are federal legislations that we are all working with in every school district.
Okay. Turning to Dennis Verkler as a representative of the Illinois Farm Bureau, I guess I'm curious about your interest in the issue of education funding, and obviously, you know, we all care about education, but I wonder, you know, why in particular the Farm Bureau has always been over the years so interested in this particular issue.
Well, part of the reason is that we have so many people on school boards. There are 900 or so districts around the state. We probably have perhaps as many as 1,000 members who are on school boards. They tend to be, like Lynn, who serves on a school board in the past, tend to be very concerned about education. And in the 80s, it became obvious to them that there was just not enough wealth to be generated from the property tax to keep a good school system in place for their children and their grandchildren. We had declines in the 80s, not just in farmland prices, but in mines and factories and other tangible wealth downstate. And I think that rural people saw this first. Urban folks also saw it, who were concerned about education. Now the suburbs have seen the same kinds of problem. But we were sort of the shock troops, if you will. And so since we respond to the concerns of our farmer members, they were telling us this is the issue. Back in the mid-80s, this is the issue that we have to do something about. And it was viewed as an education issue. It was an adequacy, equity, accountability issue. And they infused that into our policy. And we've been working on it ever since. And we've tried hard. We've been involved in all three of the major efforts to change this system. And Lynn was there at the beginning. He's had a lot of experience with this.
I think it's interesting to look back a little bit. From the very beginning here in central Illinois, the folks who settled here to farm the land brought with them the idea that education was very important. So over the last 150 years, farmers have been very involved in education and caring for their schools. Farm families typically have a number of children. And so when those children go to school, it's natural for the farm families to be involved in their education. The other side of that equation really is property taxes. Property taxes are a very serious issue for farm families. It's either paid by the farm owner, if he's a farmer, or in the cash rent or in the leasing agreements that the farmers have with the farm owners. So the real estate property taxes have always been a very big concern for farm people. In the long run, I think Illinois Farm Bureau has recognized that it's important for all the children in Illinois to have a good education. As Gene mentioned, it's a great equalizer, and that's been true in my own family with my father. My grandfather, I think, had a sixth grade education. My father graduated from the U of I and taught agriculture for a while. And my children have all graduated from college. So the involvement in our lives of education is just a big part of what we're about.
Mm-hmm. I remember back in the early 1980s when interest rates were, 15-17%, and there was a farm crisis largely caused by the decline in, high interest rates, and then it also hit the value of farmland. Prices for farmland actually declined dramatically during the early 80s, and that would have hit rural school districts very hard because of the tax base so dependent upon the property taxes and all the farmland in those areas. That was one element of it. But then subsequent to that, the economy started to turn around, and farmland values went from a very, very low point to let's say, a very much higher point. And in many cases, the property taxes rose and became a real problem for farmers. I mean, obviously, it might have helped the rural school districts, but it's a double-edged sword.
Right. I suppose Governor Ogilvie, in effect, rescued our schools back then in the 80s because of the beginning of the state income tax. Had we not had the new money, the infusion of money from the state income tax, the school districts would have had much more financial difficulty than they did. The current method of assessing farmland is really a system of capitalization of rent. And if we have to have property taxes, it's about as fair a way as trying to assess value to farmland as we could have. But it's not farmland or other property just don't respond to the economy the way income tax, sales tax, and other taxes like that work.
We have another call to talk with some clues in our conversation. We're a little past our midpoint. We're talking about the A-Plus Illinois campaign, a campaign to reform education funding in Illinois. And we have three guests, Gene Amberg, superintendent for Banas School 116, Lynn Warfel, whose voice you just heard. He's on the Parkland College Board of Trustees, among other things, and Dennis Verkler, who's a director of news and information for the Illinois Farm Bureau. And we welcome your calls as well if you'd like to join us. The number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll-free elsewhere, 800-222-9455. Caller on line number one. Good morning.
I have an idea I'd like to toss out. Mm-hmm. How about if with the sales tax, when you buy something, you enter your zip code, and a portion of the sales tax goes back to the taxing bodies for your zip code or the school district for your zip code. A lot of, in our area, we've got competition between Champaign and Urbana that's made a lot of by people who write into our local paper, but they don't talk about the fact that places like Champaign, and I'm sure this the same thing is true when you have other larger cities where the big box stores tend to locate, you have the taxes are sucked up by these entities, these governmental entities, and the farm school districts, rural school districts, suffer even more than a town like Urbana does. So that's one thought. But then my other question is, how are you going to counter the thing that happens whenever anybody tries to change the taxes, and that is you have people saying, oh, you're tax and spend liberals. Did you guys know you were tax and spend liberals?
Ouch.
We don't. That seems to be something that we defeat elected officials on.
Yeah.
If you raise taxes, you're a bad guy. There's no discourse in our country about contributing to the community. There's no discourse about saying, well, your kids may be out of school now, but if you want to be supported with Social Security, you've got to have an educated workforce earning the money to put in Social Security to pay for you. We have to have a workforce that will attract industry, an educated workforce. If you don't want people to be on welfare, you have to have an educated workforce. And things are more complicated than they used to be 50, 70 years ago in terms of the needs for schooling. How are we going to get that message across? How are we going to change people's minds so they don't just accuse any politician who votes for your proposals as somebody who raises taxes instead of cuts them? Because, you know.
Great question.
Well, yeah, that's very cogent remarks and right on target. You know, we're looking at this one House Bill 750, and no legislation is perfect. And I got an earful the other day on a panel over at Parkland College, and it was kind of pessimistic because the legislators were saying just basically the same things you were. This is going to be an uphill battle, but we're going to have to make trade-offs here. We're going to have to reform taxation. We're going to have to reform the way schools are funded. And, you know, it's a known fact that states that spend more on public education are also states that have the best economic stability and development. So this is a notion that's going to serve to stimulate our overall economy in our area. I'm going to pass the tax question off to somebody else. Sales tax.
One of the really fine legislators from this area was Helen Satterthwaite, who became an expert in school issues and was one of the best legislators in the state government on those issues. And I was working a lot with Illinois Farm Bureau at the time on this chief program when Helen was a legislator. And on one of those trips to Springfield, I had learned just enough to realize that this whole thing is impossible. Nothing really can happen because, as the caller mentioned, it takes legislators with a lot of courage. They have to bypass the idea that their most important thing is to be reelected. Really, the most important thing is to do the right thing, to study the issues and make a good informed decision and do the right thing. But actually, our system does work. And it works through people like the caller getting involved and shaking and rattling the legislators to the point that they have the courage to step forward and make progress. I'm very impressed with the hearings that the Senate has been conducting. Senator Miguel de Valle, one of the leading senators in our state Senate right now. Senator James Meeks from Chicago, who's one of the chief sponsors of this bill. Those guys are willing to step forward and put themselves on the line and say, we really do need to do something. Now let's talk about this in a serious way, and let's do it.
Well, good luck. You look at the national debates, look everywhere, and all you hear is people being attacked for wanting to raise taxes. Look at the presidential race. Bush, I'm cutting taxes, folks. It just seems like we're driving ourselves into bankruptcy by not paying for things that need to be paid for now and raising our taxes and bellying up to the bar and saying, okay, how are we going to pay for this? And let's contribute. And the people who benefited the most should be contributing more. Thanks a bunch.
Thanks for the call. Dennis, did you want to?
Yeah, the caller mentioned tax and spend liberals. I work for Farm Bureau, so I'm not sure I even know one. But all kidding aside, two comments from an old conservative named Earl Butts come to mind. One is there's no such thing as a free lunch, and the second is you get what you pay for. And I think this is true right now in education. I live in Normal, Illinois. There are probably couple hundred families in my area who are from India. They're all over here working mostly at State Farm in the technology areas. And the thing they've all got in common is they had first-class educations. And if my kids are going to compete in the world, they're going to have to get the same kind of educations that those folks got.
Well, that's an interesting point, because especially we're seeing outsourcing of so much labor because of this wonderful technology we have that, the information technology provided by the Internet. We can simply hire somebody in India, to do the programming that we formerly had somebody locally do.
Well, yeah, and I would say that the people I know who work in this industry aren't doing it because they're willing to accept low wages. Mm-hmm. They're doing it because they're qualified to do it. They had good educations, and they're here. And they got their education somewhere else. This is a global economy. We have to be able to compete in that economy.
And I can tell you, as an educator, educational research tells us over and over again that the teacher is the key to quality education. It's not that box, or it's not that hardware or software. It's that living, breathing human being who has relationships with each one of their students that makes the difference, that is the motivator for children to learn. So I think if we can't get our funding situation, the challenge will be to maintain quality education. I think it's going to suffer. We have to be very competitive and attract quality teachers to every school district in our state. And this is very tough. And without adequate funding for salaries and benefits, we're not going to be able to do it, and our children are going to pay the price. So I would concur. But, the technology is great, but that human breathing person is what our children need.
This is a tax increase. In some ways, it's a tax decrease. Mm-hmm. Actually, if you study the whole bill, what this bill would do is refit the saddle to the horse in a much better way, so that the burden becomes more bearable for all of those folks who are really fiscally challenged. And it does it without adding a tremendous burden to those who are fiscally very blessed. So it's a good type of thing to look at. In the fine points, there needs to be some discussion, particularly in the sales tax area. But overall, the parts of this bill are really good parts. And the decrease in property tax is a very important part of it.
We're talking about the A-Plus Illinois campaign, a campaign to reform education funding in Illinois. And we have three guests here in the studio, and we have a caller waiting patiently. We'll go next to someone on a car phone, line number 4. Good morning.
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me okay?
Sure.
Yeah, I'm enjoying the conversation. I have kind of a unique perspective and an observation. My wife and I moved down to a small East Central Illinois town about 8 years ago from Chicago. Now, when I went to high school in the 70s, I went to a private high school. It was $300 a year. Now it's over $6,000. And we appreciate being able to take care of, take advantage of the public school system here. But it's really a very economically hurting area. The businesses have kind of closed up, dried up. They've asked me to be on the school board, which I appreciate the opportunity, but with businesses closing up and homes for sale, you know, I just don't know where the property tax, the money at the increase is going to come from. It's kind of a scary situation. Half of the kids at the high school are on the free lunch program, and God, you hate to have them cut any programs. You want to keep your school system good and viable, but you know, without the economic development, it's just, you know, it's like getting blood out of a rock. And it's, I know we're not unique. I mean, we're about 125 miles south of Chicago. It's a small town of 6,000, and I'm sure a lot of communities are hurting. But I think your panel is exactly right. They need to wake up the legislature and do something before, you know, the last one out of town turn off the lights. And I'm just, I would appreciate their comments on that.
Okay. Lynn Warfel?
I would really appreciate your serious consideration of serving on the school board and getting active in this issue, because it's people just like you who really need to step forward. And having been a veteran of 10 years on our school board, you don't need to think about it as a lifetime job, but something that you can take a turn at and do your part. I think that's very important.
The caller is really accurate. Our current funding method is badly broken. And like anything in our society, something that's badly broken, if we don't fix it now, the problem's only going to worsen for us all. And I think this is the time. Now is the time to do something historic. It's very easy to, for elected officials, I think, to say that they're for education. It's much more difficult to say and act in a fair and you know, sustainable way to fund schools over time. And I think that's what we're asking them to do.
I don't want to scare the caller. This is Dennis again, but I want to tell a little story. This conversation started out with Jack asking, well, how bad is it? And actually, I think with schools, it's not like a train wreck. It's more like a big ship going down slowly. And the big ship that I went to high school at finally sunk this past year. I grew up in a little town of Shenoah in northern McLean County. My great-great-grandfather came there in 1854. My grandfather went to the first consolidated high school there. He graduated from it. My dad graduated from the same school, came down here to the University of Illinois, and became a bronze tablet scholar. The system was good enough to keep cranking out Verklers who knew how to go to college. They put me into the system at the U of I in 1967. Along with five of my classmates in a class of 39. In the 70s and 80s, things started going wrong for the school district. It was on the financial watch list several years. And what happened to it was the better students, the parents of the better students, started sending them elsewhere. My nephew graduated this last year in a class of 19. None of them applied to the U of I. Four of them applied to Illinois State University. None of them qualified to get in. That's how much decline took place in that small school. Now, you can say, truthfully, there were some bad decisions about not trying to merge earlier and things like that. Mm. The school system was dissolved. It was merged with Prairie Central, which is to the east. But this took place over a long period of time. It wasn't, you know, a crisis is something that happens almost without any expectation. But school problems affect a community as just a downward spiral, and it takes a long time, but you eventually get to a very bad place. And the over-reliance on property tax was a part, a key part, of the problem this school system encountered.
Wow. Well, let me ask you this. You know, we've been talking about this idea of changing the balance of taxation away from property taxes and toward income taxes and perhaps sales taxes. That's a separate issue that I want to talk about in a minute. But the idea of reducing property taxes and increasing the reliance on income taxes in particular has been on the table a number of times. As Gene Amberg mentioned, there have been three blue ribbon panels. There have been many people who have been proposing this very idea for a very long time. There was the Changing Illinois Education is Finance campaign, the chief campaign that Lynn Warfel mentioned that I remember quite well. And please correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't recall hearing anyone say this is a bad idea on the basis of its merits. That, you know, this notion of reducing property taxes, increasing income taxes is, you know, as opposed to it being a tax increase, it's a tax adjustment. And I think, you know, there's a reasonable argument for that that I have yet to hear an opposing argument. And if a caller would like to raise that, that's great. But I guess I'm asking you. Have you run into people who say this is wrong? This is a bad idea.
Certainly, we have. I don't know. I want your callers to realize that there's a Center for Tax and Budget Accountability in Chicago. A fellow named Ralph Martiri, who has been traveling around the state of Illinois, who knows this stuff really well, and who is a very strong proponent of House Bill 750. But there are lots of roadblocks, so this is going to be an uphill climb for us. We think that the time is now, but we think that the city of Chicago will be opposed for some reasons, that some of the wealthier school districts are going to be opposed. But in Urbana, for example, House Bill 750, if it were enacted, there would be an average savings per home, where the average assessed valuation taken in that into consideration in Urbana would be almost 11%. Mm-hmm. If this were that'd be $322 a year. Mm-hmm. The average savings per acre in this area would be almost 14% at $2.55 per acre. So there would be an increase of foundation level funding. There would be a less reliability on local taxes. Right now in Urbana, we rely at 55% of our revenue comes from the local sources, from our taxpayers. If House Bill 750 were able to be successful, it would be closer to 40%. So that reliability on property tax would be lessened.
Okay.
House Bill 750 does raise the state's portion from 36% to 51%. It raises the foundation level, which is currently under $5,000, to just under $6,000. And that raising that foundation level is so crucial for the small districts, like the previous caller mentioned. And what that means simply is that if the local district can't get up to that $6,000 figure, the state would kick in enough to make it a $6,000 per child figure.
Well, let me ask you this. Would it actually harm the Chicago school districts that currently enjoy the very high spending per pupil, or are there ways that they would be able to maintain that spending?
Well, if Ralph were here, Ralph Martiri, he'd be able to answer that very well.
Yeah.
Jack, I can't, but I think that there is a way. I think that the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability has looked at all of these scenarios and says this is going to be beneficial. There will be no school district that will lose funding under this House bill.
Yeah. We have a couple callers. Let's include them in our conversation. We have just about 10 minutes left, and we'll go next to a campus caller on line number one. Good morning.
Hi. We've heard it said a number of times this is going to be an uphill battle, and of course that's true. And I want to encourage anybody who's listening and has decided that this is overall a good idea, first of all, to thank Senator Winkle. Who, as you noted, is one of the very few at this point supporters of this bill. Thank him, and if he's not your senator, get your senators on. Also, the governor needs to be encouraged to support this. Indications are that he is not going to support it. I actually met with Senator Winkle a while back, and one of the things he said is they're hoping to get a veto-proof majority on this because they're afraid that the governor would veto it. So if you think this is a good idea, write to your governor, write to your representatives, and encourage them to back it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
The governor has put himself in a very serious corner and has really had to struggle with that. And I hope he has to struggle with it a whole lot more, because taking an income tax portion out of consideration for school support is just not a reasonable thing to do. And I think he made a mistake when he did that, but that was history. We have a future to look forward to. The governor did talk about not raising the state income tax, but also taking care of the schools. And he has shown that he has a great interest in schools. So we need to hold his feet to the fire terrifically on this issue.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is a danger for any politician who is going to support what could be spun as a tax increase. And I remember very clearly from the campaign of Dawn Clark Netsch how she was accused. I remember very clearly the campaign ad saying she favors a 47% tax increase. And that, on the face of it, sounds really, you know, if you're against raising taxes, really bad. And so, you know, it's easy to spin this in a political campaign to make someone look like they're supporting, they're a tax and spend liberal, put it that way.
But this configuration does lots. The new revenue would be coupled with $2.5 billion, with a B, mm-hmm. abatement in local property taxes. Yeah. And this is a huge shift, even without educational funding disparities being between school districts being as they are. So this is the right time. We think the vehicle is here. We think the discussion ought to continue with House Bill 750 and really move forward. Again, it's easy to say I'm a legislator that's for children, for education. They need to get some backbone here and really do what's right for children.
Okay. Gene, you've mentioned before that even with raising the state income tax to 5%, how would we rate compared to a state like Mississippi?
Well, from what I understand, we're 41st right now in income tax, what we tax our citizens. And even if we went from 3%, which was proposed, to 5% income tax increase, we would only raise to 34th in the country, and that would tie us with the state of Mississippi.
Okay. We have two callers waiting, and I'll try to get them both in before we run out of time. We have just about 5 minutes left. We'll go next to a listener in Douglas County on line number 4. Good morning.
Thanks.
Yes.
The host nearly made my point just a minute ago when he recalled the governor's election when Don Clark Netsch proposed something very similar to this plan, and Governor Edgar totally beat him up on it. And I understand there's somebody representing a Farm Bureau on this panel.
Yes.
And the Farm Bureau has a political action committee that's very closely affiliated with Republicans. Are you people going to call off the dog? Will you commit to keeping your people in line and punishing those legislators who demagogue this issue? Because one can understand those of us who remember Don Clark Netsch's campaign and precisely those ads that the host just referred to. And the Farm Bureau did not come to her defense. They let her dangle in the wind. And what makes it even more ironic is once the governor, Edgar, was reelected, he then proposed something very similar to her plan, but of course he had already taught everybody that this was a toxic issue and it was dead in the water. So I'd like to hear the people from the Farm Bureau commit that they will stand behind candidates who take the lead on this, and they will punish their Republican allies who demagogue the issue.
Okay, I think we take your point. You want to tackle that, Dennis?
Well, as the Farm Bureau guy here, the lowly staffer, I can tell you with conviction that I don't necessarily tell my farmer members what to do. And we do not endorse statewide candidates. So, the caller said we didn't come to Don Clark Netsch's defense. I think what we did was we came to the defense of the concept. We weren't in a position to save her campaign, save her candidacy. And we've consistently supported the concept through time and talked both Democrats and Republicans into supporting this concept. And I think that's important. This hasn't necessarily been a Democratic issue or necessarily been a Republican issue. It's been an issue that's been near and dear to people to leaders who have really understood education policy and wanted to push it forward. And so we've been in a position not of penalizing politicians or rewarding politicians on this issue, but of informing just as many as we could and working with just as many groups as we could to make it clear how we want to how we want this issue to be handled in Springfield.
Okay. Speaking just for Champaign County Farm Bureau, and I've been on the legislative committee for about 30 years now and very active in that, past chairman of the legislative committee. I can tell you that we work very diligently to work with both sides of the aisle and the independents, that we have developed relationships with both sides of the aisle people, that we currently work with the local representatives of both parties, and we do that statewide also. Actually, here in Champaign County, we have Representative Larry McEwen, who's one of the leaders, Democratic leaders in the House right now. He comes to Champaign County several times a year and visits with us and goes out on the farm with us. So we do work with both sides.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry to say that we're out of time. There's much more we could talk about. But before we end, do you want to, again, give out the website address so people, if they'd like to know more, they can find out?
Be happy to. It's A Plus Illinois. That's APLUS Illinois, all one word, .org.
Okay.
Yeah. And also, Jack, if I might, the Coalition for School Funding Reform, is the Champaign County chapter, is at 312 West Oregon. That's Leal Elementary School in Urbana. And also then there's the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability, that both of these groups have speaker bureaus and would be happy to send out someone to your group. The Tax and Budget Accountability group is in Chicago, and we can get that information to people as well if they call Leal School.
Okay, very good. Well, our guests for this hour, Gene Amberg, whose voice you just heard, Superintendent of Urbana School District 116, Lynn Warfel, a longtime member of the Champaign County Farm Bureau, and also on the Parkland College Board of Trustees, and many other roles in Illinois education, and Dennis Verkler, Director of News Information for the Illinois Farm Bureau, members of the A-Plus Illinois campaign. Thanks to you all for being here.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.